Join us for the Sharks NHL Draft Party on June 28th at 3 p.m. Witness the Sharks select number one overall for the first time in franchise history and celebrate the team's future with fellow Sharks fans. Don't miss out on experiencing this historic event with an electrifying atmosphere at SAP Center by securing your tickets today at sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal. That's sjsharks.com/thefutureisteal.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Sharks Hockey Hour. This is your host, Jaranveer Mahal from INDTV USA. The show is brought to you by San Jose Sharks, Radio Zindagi, 1550 AM, and INDTV USA. And today, my co-host is Mr. Manohar Bajor, very talented, that you all know very well. He has his own couple of shows. But we have a very special guest today from the San Jose Sharks, the San Jose Sharks goalie, Mr. Devin Cooley. So today we'll get to know all about Devin, about his career in hockey and how he got to where he is. And let me tell you, it's a very exciting story. So you want to stay tuned and follow us on INDTV USA, Radio Zindagi, and the show will also be available on the San Jose Sharks app. So if you don't have the San Jose Sharks app, you can download that. And you can also watch the live video version of the show on Roku or Comcast, or just follow INDTV USA in social media. So, we have a really special guest today who's young, handsome, tall, and on top of that, he's making about $1 million a year. How do you beat something like that? Well, welcome to the show, Devin. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. That's a great introduction.
Well, you know, it's funny, we were talking earlier, when we were in school, I was a short guy, not quite as tall as you are or as handsome, and pretty nerdy, didn't speak English. And I'm thinking, I always didn't like these athletes in school, you know, it's a lot of competition for us. But I see why. I mean, you have a pretty amazing story. But before we get to the earlier times, let's talk about a little bit of this season. This season, you got to play your first NHL game as a San Jose Sharks. I think you started in against the Blackhawks was your first game. But you played six games. How was your overall feeling of playing these six games in San Jose? Well, some of them, two of them in San Jose. But especially with the San Jose Sharks, a team that you grew up loving.
Yeah, it was amazing. I mean, obviously, being able to come back to my hometown and stay at my dad's house and do the same drive I did, you know, when I was a kid, going to the rink every day, it was really special. It was really amazing. Just an incredible experience. And I thought I had a lot of really positives, you know, in my play, and some negatives and some things to learn and build off of, too. I thought, you know, the first game was obviously crazy. It was a lot of nerves. You know, I had a lot of friends and family there. It was like I made it to the NHL. And then after that, I thought I just got more and more comfortable, and I had some really good games in there too, where all the work that I was putting in was really starting to show and come together, and the nerves were able to be settled. And a lot of great things to take away, and a lot of positives, and just an overall incredible experience.
So it's funny, when you talk about your first game at home, that was an incredible game. I know the San Jose Sharks didn't win. We lost an OT, I think, that game. But, man, what a game that was. It was a sold-out arena, which, you know, lately the Sharks have been struggling, obviously, for the last few seasons. And it's been tough for the Sharks to fill the arena. But that day, it was a sold-out event. And, regardless whether the Sharks won or lost, but, man, you kept the Sharks in. Man, I know in the last few seconds there was a goal, and there was a lot of shouts of your mom in the audience when that happened, and your dad. And speaking of your dad, actually, I do want to say a couple of things. Scott, your dad, him and I know each other from some time, and we actually have a relationship outside of this. But, you know, Scott, so that was an interesting experience for you too. I know a lot of time you're thinking maybe today's going to get the start, today's going to get the start, and finally that came. So how was that for you as a dad to be in the audience and watching that first home game with the San Jose Sharks and your son in the net?
Yeah, indescribable. Yeah, and I lost it because I went screaming and yelling and running all over the place and pulled my jersey off and put it on the window glass and the rink. But it's exciting. You know, it's not something that we ever planned on. We just took them to hockey every day, and so it was a great experience to see that. It's, you know, Devin's worked really hard, and what he does, and he's just so dedicated. You know, even as a little kid, he was so dedicated. He'd go out and play 8 hours a day, and then come in and have dinner, and then want to go up play more after dinner. So it's,
yeah. You know, it's funny. Believe it or not, I do have a clip of Devin right after that game. So I have a little clip about what he felt that experience was like. You know, I know sometimes a lot of the focus is on win or loss, but you know, every day that's not the most important thing, even though it is in the long haul. But for Devin, that was a win nonetheless, regardless of what the score was. So here, actually, I got a very short clip from Devin right after that game. Devin, putting aside sort of this anti-climax ending there, but how was it for you playing at the home here in front of the San Jose crowd at a house full?
Yeah, it started off really great, and then, you know, now it's a little bit embarrassing. Maybe this one wasn't at home, you know. But, you know, obviously it was super special, like going through the Shark Head and seeing the crowd and everything. It's just, you know, it's something I've dreamt of my whole life, and I wish it was a better result, but, you know, it's still really cool, and it'll be cool to look back on.
You know, Devin, we were talking about it a little bit earlier, how I love this straight talk attitude. You know, just saying what's on your mind and, you know, what you feel. And what you said is what 99% of the people would feel, you know, rather than focusing too much on the loss. But nonetheless, you know, it was pretty amazing. I think you probably had a lot of fans in the, you know, in the stands that day. And so it's a great experience. Now, before that, unfortunately, your first NHL game, even though there were some talks whether you would get the start in San Jose, but it ended up being in Chicago. Why do you think that was? Why do you think you had that first start in Chicago?
If I'm being just brutally honest, I think we were on a long road trip. Magnus Corona had been playing a lot, and Chicago was, you know, second to last place team. So I think if you're going to give a guy, you know, who hasn't played in the NHL yet, you're going to give him his first NHL game, I think that probably would have made the most sense was to put him in with Chicago and give him the best chance to win, I think.
And you know, it's funny because when you have a new player, you know, if he's playing his first NHL game, if he's a forward or defender, it's a little bit easier in those positions to kind of introduce him because you could control his ice time, mm-hmm. you know, you could control his shifts, and depending on who you put on with him, you could sort of counterbalance that. With a goalie, there's nowhere to hide, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you just got to go cold turkey. And I've seen quite a few goalies who have played their first game, so it does start quite like that. So even though, yeah, I mean, that's not unusual. You had a pretty good game, I thought, overall. But, yeah, it just takes a little time to settle in with the speed and some of the players you haven't faced. Mm-hmm. And now you're facing, you know, some of the world's best shooters, world's best skaters. You know, basically some of the world's best teams right here. So I can understand that. But nonetheless, you got a win at home, you know, after all. So, which was also pretty impressive. And that came against the Blues. You know, what do you think about that? And what do you remember about that game?
Yeah, that was an awesome one. And I remember feeling really good that whole game. Like, all the work that I'd been putting in with Spearsy, the goalie coach, was really starting to show. And I was it was my first game of like feeling really comfortable and not having to think about the things that I was working on. It started to become a lot more natural. And yeah, it was a really great game. I was buzzing, and then they scored with like, how much time was left? Like a minute left or something like that?
Yeah, it was like less than a minute left.
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God.
Like for like the third time, you know, and in the third period they came back. And we ended up going to overtime, and then they took that penalty. We took that penalty in overtime, and I was like, oh, man, here we go, Rick. And another upset, you know. And I was just trying to stay in the present moment, and luckily we killed off the penalty. And then when we scored the final goal, it was like just like the best feeling in the world. You know, it was just like such a relief off my shoulders. I just went nuts, and it was great to celebrate with those guys.
And I guess as you get, you know, sort of more and more, you know, as the rubber hits the road in the NHL, that confidence continues to grow. And I guess more important is just studying the players, some of the players that you see in NHL, you know, how they play or where they shoot from or what are their tendencies. And as a goalie, do you pay a lot of attention to who has the puck? Is a left-handed shooter, right-handed shooter, what he's doing? Is that going in your head? Or you just got a player who got the puck and you're going to not cheat and you know, stay to a side until a pass happens?
Yeah, you definitely want to know what hand the shooters are. Mm-hmm. And you want to know what the guy who has the puck, you want to know what all his options are. So, like, if there's a guy with the puck, and you know his only option is a pass, you know, across the ice to another guy, you want to make sure if he's on his one-timer side or if his offhand side. You basically just want to know where everybody is all the time and what the guy's options are. And then the other time where you really want to know, like, what's going to happen is when you're on the penalty kill and the other team's on the power play. You want to know, you know, what this team likes to do on the power play, what this team likes to do in the zone. So that way you can kind of start to predict and you won't be caught as by surprise by anything. But other than that, a lot of it's like you just got to shut your mind off and just play because it happens too quick for you to really predict.
Yeah, you can't
everything.
Really analyze too much.
Exactly.
But I guess you just kind of got to be a little cognizant or, you know, if it's Connor McDavid or who has the puck and is he likely to pass more than shooting. For example, William Eklund, one of the later games there where he had the puck in the OT and you ask him, hey, so what are you thinking of passing? It was a 2-on-1. He said, oh, no, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So there are players who you know that the shot is coming from them.
Yeah, a little bit. But again, the guys here in this league are so good. Like, they're going to be able to trick you. And if you think they're going to shoot, like, they're probably going to end up passing it. You know,
yeah.
It's just you got to really be ready for everything. But what you said, it's good to have, like, a good idea of what people like to do and their habits, but don't rely on it either.
You know, since you're talking about the plays, I always wondered in some of these plays, what does the goalie prefer? How does he sees the game? So let's say I'm going to pick some hypothetical examples. Let's say there's a 2-on-1 developing, and the 2-on-1 defender is leaning obviously towards the guy with the puck, and the guy with the puck is on the right-hand side. So they're skating now. There's a couple of ways he could play that. He could kind of shift a little bit more to the center, just to make it a little easier to protect the pass. Or he could try to protect the pass at the same time, try to take on the guy a little bit, where tries to make him go wider,
mm-hmm.
versus the both of them closing in, getting tighter and tighter. So what are your thoughts? What do you like the defender to see if there's a 2-on-1 developing and they're fairly wide at the time of development?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's if there's a 2-on-1, you want to play it to where you're not just letting the guy with the puck just walk in on a breakaway. You know, you kind of want to pressure him a little bit, but ultimately your responsibility is the backdoor pass. So you don't want to let that pass go through and you want to let the goalie have the shot. So you want to give the goalie the shot, but don't give that guy with the puck a full breakaway.
Full breakaway, yeah. Don't let him see the whole net.
Exactly.
See, I always thought you almost want him to be a little bit further on the outside just because you narrow the net a bit, mm-hmm. versus when he tries to get closer and closer to the slot. You know, no matter how big the goalie is, there's a lot of openings when you see it right in the front, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Versus seeing on the angle. Now, what about defenders going behind the net a lot? You know, some defenders tend not to. A lot of times you see in a play, both defenders are behind the net, and then, of course, the center is dropping down trying to play sort of defense in front of the goalie. What do you think should happen there? Do you like never to have two defenders go behind the net? One defender go behind the net, or let the center do the job of the boards?
Yeah, it really kind of depends on the play and, you know, like who has the puck and where their other guys are. So it really, it depends, you know. But obviously, the main focus is that if your team doesn't have the puck, you don't want one of their guys in front of the net with no D there.
Yeah.
You know, you always want somebody helping out in front of the net because that's the most threatening guy. They're not going to score from behind the goal
line. Behind the goal,
and if they do, it's the goalie's fault,
yeah.
You know. So if the other team has the puck and one of our D is pressuring him, then the other D should definitely be in front of the net and taking away anybody in front of the net.
And then what do you think about, you know, when the other team is trying to, you know, sort of wrap around the, you know, the puck on a dump-in, and do you like going behind the net? Do you like to prevent that and cut it off behind the net? Or do you like just kind of staying in your zone there?
I'm more of a stay in my net kind of thing. Only go out, you know, if I feel it's really necessary and that I'm going to help my team, you know. So I'm not you know, looking to jump out, you know, every chance I get. Like some guys really are really enjoying and are really good at it. But I just try to keep things very simple. And if I can get to the puck and I can make a play to make my defenseman's job easier, then I'm definitely going to do that.
And so, since we are talking about the game a bit, I want to get to what do you do as you prepare for the game. So I know we had a conversation the other day that you were wearing the VR glasses, mm-hmm. that you like to do warm up with the VR glasses. Now, that's something I've never seen before. Is that something more and more goalies you think are doing, or are you in particularly doing that?
Yeah, I think it's really starting to gain a lot of popularity. So the first time that I had used it would have been during COVID, actually. Because the goalie that I trained with, Joey DeCord, he's Seattle's goalie, his dad's goaltending company works with them a lot, Sense Arena. And so I had tried it with Joey and through that company, and I was like, oh, like, this is pretty cool. And then I also play with Devin Levi, who is a huge proponent of it. I think he's, like, sponsored by him. And so, yeah, I'm talking with Levi and seeing Joey use it. I was like, you know what, I feel like this could be a really good thing to do, you know, before the games. And so I started doing it, and I started to feel a lot better, like, at the beginning of the start of the games. Because with goalie, it's hard. Like, it's hard to get into the games right away, you know. Sometimes it takes, like, one or two saves, and then you're like, okay, now I feel good, now I feel comfortable, you know. But if those first two shots go in or whatever, then it's like, well, now I feel even worse.
Yeah.
You know, and with the Sense Arena, the virtual reality stuff, it's like you make a million of those saves and it feels like the real game before you even start the game. So you start the game already super comfortable. It felt like you feel like you've already made a bunch of saves, you know, and it's just a way easier for me to get into things.
And it's funny, I remember reading an article a long time ago, I think it was from NBA, where they were trying to see if the players could just imagine shots, not actually throw the shots,
yeah,
and to see if they improve if they continue to do that in a regular schedule. And they found out that you actually do improve,
yeah,
just imagining it. So I can see how having that VR, it's like it's much better than imagination, it's almost reality.
Yeah.
So what about the sound? Do you also have some sound coming too, or no?
Yeah, there's sound with it, but I don't really use the sound. I just like to listen to music. But yeah, the sound is real, and you can have real shooters coming down on you, and it feels like pretty real, and it really gets you in the right headspace.
So speaking of music, that's a great transition. I was trying to ask your dad, you know, hey, I want to play a song in the beginning, because you saw a little commotion that happens during the transition. We're setting a bunch of things. So generally I'll play a song. I thought I'll play, you know, one of your favorite songs. But it turns out you listen to EDM music and you create music. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
Your music apparently is on Spotify, right?
Yeah, I mean, I listen to all types of music. And yeah, when I was in college and right before college, I got really into producing music with a couple of my friends. And yeah, I don't really put stuff on Spotify, but I throw it on like SoundCloud and stuff, you know. But yeah, it's like my songs, a couple of them, I think I have like a couple million plays on some songs and stuff, but it's mostly like electronic music and more like melodical, euphoric kind of sounding stuff. But yeah, I'm a huge EDM fan, but I also like jazz, you know, I like indie alternative stuff. I like, you know, classical. I like all types of music.
So what would you say is your most listened to song in the last year?
Most listened to song?
Yeah.
That's a really tough one.
Because Spotify gives you that stat, right? At the end of the year, they give you the most played song prioritized.
Yeah. Probably Silver Lining by Mount Joy. That's a really good one. He's like, they're like an indie alternative kind of sounding band, alternative rock band.
See, originally Saba was trying to have a little band here who would play, you know, the song that you like. I was saying, well, the logistics is just going to get so complicated.
Yeah.
You know, how they're going to play. But once he said EDM, I'm thinking, oh, no, they're not going to know any
EDM. We're going to get a DJ in here.
It's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
You know? So anyway, now, as far as the music, so you mentioned right before, you know, when you're warming up, you listen to music. Is that the same song you always listen to? Or do you have a little playlist and you change it up?
Yeah, so I change it up all the time. Like I said, I listen to a million different genres of music. So, like, it totally just depends how I'm feeling. Like, I'll go through, like, you know, like, deep house, like, electronic stuff, or just, like, really fun, like, house music, like, that you dance to. And then I'll go to, like, old school rap, you know, like, or just like classical music, or I'll do something that like really relaxes you. It really just depends on like my headspace. Like if I feel like I need a lot more energy and I'm a little bit tired, I'll play like really more like aggressive, like fun, like dancey kind of stuff, party stuff. But if I'm feeling like a lot more anxious and a little more nervous, then I'll play classical. I'll play something to relax too, or just like totally chill out. And if I'm just feeling really flowy or whatever, I'll maybe throw on some rap, you know, just keep it going. But yeah, it totally depends on my headspace. I definitely change it up a lot.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, where you are now, you know, being in the NHL and so on. I want to go back to a little bit of your childhood, because you're raised in the area, Las Guerras.
Yep.
I assume you went to Las Guerras High.
Yep.
Well, how was younger life like for you? When did you first started to skate? When did you first started to think, hey, you know, you want to play hockey? And how did your parents handle all that?
Yeah, so I first started to skate when I was 5. My parents got me into it after I did like a field trip with my older brother. We went to an outdoor ice skating rink, and I was just like naturally good at skating. I just picked it up really easy. And my parents decided to put me in hockey like the following year. So yeah, I started playing when I was 5. I switched to goalie when I was 8. And I just fell in love with it like immediately. And so for me, it was just like, I always loved it, and it was always my biggest passion in my life. And I just wanted to just play like all the time. Like what my dad brought up earlier, he's like, oh yeah, he always was always out there like 8 hours a day or whatever. And it's like, just because I was having so much fun with it, like I just loved it. And obviously the dream was always to make it to the NHL and stuff. But I think for me, it was more just like, I just wanted to play, you know, and now getting to the NHL and stuff is a byproduct of like just having such a passion for it and always loving like the work ethic and the process and stuff. And then, so yeah, I did my whole youth career through the Junior Sharks program, all the way from when I was 5 to high school, end of high school, 18, and then played juniors in a few places. But it probably wasn't until my sophomore year of college, after I had a record-breaking season for University of Denver, where I was like, oh man, like maybe I think I could like go pro here, you know? And then yeah, the following year I'd signed my first contract. And then yeah, at that point it's basically like you never know what's gonna happen, you know?
That's funny. I was thinking, you know, at probably a lot younger age you sort of saw the dream that, hey, that's something you want to do as a pro. But you're saying that actually happened in NCAA and...
Well, I always had the dream. Like, no doubt, I always wanted to go to the NHL. I was like, that was my biggest dream in life. But, you know, you got to be a little bit realistic,
yeah,
too. Like, I love it. And, like, being from California, like, there was nobody that we had, like, growing up, like, where it's like, oh, like, they're going to the NHL, too, or, like, blah, blah, blah. Like, there wasn't many people. It was all, like, a new thing for us. And so, like, when I was, you know... growing up, like I didn't even know what juniors was. Like we didn't even know what travel hockey was. So it was like we kind of were taking it one step at a time, and just with the NHL in the background, you know. And then it was like, oh, I turned, you know, 12 or whatever, and then my dad's like, what, they have a travel program, you know, like there's certain levels of different travel programs. So we're like, oh, that's so cool, like we got to get to the highest level for that. And then we play a couple of years of that, and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh yeah, the next step is juniors. And we're like, well, what's juniors, you know? So
yeah,
my dad used to invite like coaches over and stuff and ask them all the questions so we could try to figure out like what the next step was. But you know, while you're going through all that, you're kind of like, oh, you know, the highest level juniors, like those are only for the really good players, you know, everyone's from Canada or Minnesota
yeah,
or Michigan or whatever, like that's not for people like me. But obviously the passion was always there, and then it was just cool taking it one step at a time, you know, with obviously the ultimate goal like being in the NHL. But like I said, going back to what that comment in college, like that was the first year where I was like holy, like I think I could
this
do this, like
happen.
I could get there.
Because if you're once you're in NCAA, I mean, you're already pretty select group of athletes.
Yeah, for
you
sure.
You are literally, you know, you can smell the NHL from there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a confusing process. I mean, we were lost. And to quote Devin one year, he's like, oh, we were just all winging it.
Yeah.
So Scott, yeah, you know, I'm a single parent. I raised three kids. And they would play soccer, and I know how complicated it is after school to get them in soccer. And I know hockey is a lot tougher because, number one, there aren't a lot of hockey skates all around here, the rinks.
Right.
And number two, the times you get for the beginners are pretty weird timing. So how'd you guys manage all that, taking them to the rink and, you know?
To that point, we couldn't play a game if we didn't get on an airplane.
Wow.
There was no other team in Northern California once you got to what, double A or triple A in high school period, like we had to fly, and usually it was flying back east to the Midwest or Chicago or Minnesota or Michigan. So to have to get on an airplane for the whole weekend, and I've got two other kids as a single dad, yeah, that was tough. But, yeah. You know, we had a lot of friends, and there were a lot of times when the coach says, look, I'll get them there, I'll figure it out, you know, we'd put them with somebody else, or he'd fly out with someone else, but we got him there, and it worked out, but it was, yeah, it was a challenge.
Well, one of the things, you know, obviously, Scott, you're a successful guy here, which helps a lot. But, you know, a lot of the kids, they have to go through billet family. And, you know, maybe, I guess you've been spared that at least.
No,
right?
he
in juniors.
He
did, I did the
he was, two yeah.
Two years? He did.
Yeah, 2 years.
He was in the billet family. Great people. We had fabulous experiences with the, because, yeah, he had to play in all these little weird towns.
Weird places,
out in the
yeah.
Nowhere. Yeah.
Especially in Canada, there's some really remote towns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so how was that like? Here you are living with another family, and that's kind of your family for a while.
Yeah, yeah, the Baylor family was great. I always had great experiences. I played in Michigan, Illinois, and Washington. So the Baylor families were awesome, but it was a culture shock. For sure, because I had done California and played with California players, you know, my entire life. And all of a sudden, I'm playing in Michigan, you know, with guys from Michigan and Minnesota and from the East Coast. And it's just like a total, like, different culture. You know, they listen to different types of music. They enjoy different things. They wear different clothes. So it was definitely pretty weird. Like, they speak a different way, too. So it was a really cool experience.
And those just, how does the financial thing work? I think Baylor families, they get some money from the league.
It's a tiny amount,
like for the food or whatever.
Like,
yeah,
it's
like raising another child, you know, pretty much.
Yeah. It is, but that experience I think was very forming from a parent standpoint, very forming for Devin, because you really get to see you're out in the middle of nowhere. You get to see what family life is, you know, because you grow up in a very Los Gatos is a little sterile in a lot of ways, you know, and here he gets to experience everything and what it's like to have a home cooked meal that's different every night. And but I consider us lucky. We had some really great parents that helped them out, and to this day they're following them like crazy. They just, you know, and they were part of that process.
You know, it's interesting, until you get involved in sports, I don't think most people know what a billet family is.
Right.
And how kids go through all that, you know, go to remote areas, they live with another family, sometimes for many years, and, you know, and what people are doing to help your kid in the middle of nowhere, you know, and they're sort of having their own battle. I talked to a couple of players in Canada, that's when I first even found out what a billet family is. So I was asking him, you know, okay, so where did you start, where did you play, and when he mentioned some of this town, I said, where's that at? And then I said, well, how'd your parents, like, you know, move over there? He said, no, it's like, he was with the billet family. That's when I first learned that there was such thing in sports where there are billet family who basically volunteer, you know, in the hockey community to take on a player.
Yeah.
And sort of help them through it. And I assume, in general, most of them are passionate about hockey.
For sure, yeah. They're always, like, great people. They're usually big fans, you know, or they have young kids themselves and they want somebody older, you know, to hang out with their kids, or their kids are out of the house and now they want to be like in that parent role again. But yeah, it's usually great people.
And they take you to the games and go to your games and all that.
Yeah. I mean, like, you usually have your own car and stuff, you know, at that point. But yeah, they feed you, they take care of you, you know, make sure things are clean and whatnot. And yeah, they're great.
And it's interesting, at that time, I mean, the players virtually make nothing, you know? It's a lifelong journey of literally making nothing. But, you know, ultimately, if you, you know, sort of are lucky enough and all the stars line up for you and you work very hard and you end up finally getting a chance at the NHL. And then most people think, okay, once you got to NHL, oh, that's hitting big. But that's where another journey just starts, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like, now that I've played in the NHL, I feel like I'm kind of starting all over again.
Yeah, it's like you're at the bottom again in a way, you know,
exactly.
Now finding your way again.
100%, but that's the best part, you know. I think that's where I think most guys at this level, like, they love the process and they love the grind, and that's what I love more than anything. And so now it's just like, okay, let's see how far, like, I can really go now, and it's really exciting.
So it's funny, my daughter, she went to UC Berkeley, and she was doing pre-med. and she always thought she was super smart in her high school. But then when she got to pre-med in Berkeley, she said, oh, maybe there are a lot of other people smarter too. But then she got to med school where like everybody's smart. And she said, oh my God, I'm not used to feeling average. And I'm sure there's a little bit of that for athletes. You know, once you go to, you know, from AHL or NCAA and you step on the ice at the NHL level, and it's like, whoa, that's a whole another ball game, right?
Yeah, but like kind of like what I said, like that's the best part, because like that's how you become the best, is by playing against the best. And so like as a competitor, like someone like me, like who just loves the process and wants to be as good as I can possibly be, it's like it's literally the dream, because every single day I get to compete against the best in the world, and I can continue to develop, you know, against the best, and it's really awesome.
You know, it was interesting, because I think the one thing about Devin is he's ability to jump into a different environment and then very quickly excel in that environment. But it's a completely radical new environment. Like he went from junior or from high school into juniors, and then juniors into college, and there were three different levels in the juniors that he filtered through. Like it seemed like it was always changing. But every time he'd step into a situation, look around and sit there, okay, this is what I need to do. And he would get right to busy, no hiccups, no problems, and he made it happen.
And you know, how do you manage the school, especially when you were in Denver or even high school? I mean, Las Guerras High is not an easy school, but how do you manage and sort of balance between your studies and all the practice and the time you need to put in for hockey?
Yeah, high school was a lot easier. You know, we didn't practice a whole bunch, you know, with the Junior Sharks. I'm not sure how it is now, but I think we only practice like 3 times a week, and then we travel a lot, you know. So that schedule wasn't crazy tough, you know, as long as you were dialed in and you weren't lazy about stuff. Yeah. Like, of course, you always had to use it as an excuse, you know, if you were a little bit lazy, like, well, I have hockey, you know. Like, it really wasn't too bad. College was tough. That was a lot of work, honestly. Yeah. It was like, my busiest days, we would have 12 to 4 blocked off for hockey and working out and eating lunch or whatever. But on my busiest days, it'd be 8 to 12 class, 12 to 4 hockey, and then 4 to 8 class again. And then after that, you're doing all your homework, all your studying, and you have no weekends either. So Friday and Saturday, you're playing games, so those days are done. You can't do any studying, you can't do any homework on those days. Yeah. So it's like everything gets cut short, and then the days that you're traveling, you know, you're getting in on Sunday, and it's a lot tougher. So that was really hard. I almost never had free time in college. I was just like, it's either hockey or it was like doing homework or studying or whatever. But it was definitely very rewarding too. Like you were always going, you were always dialed in. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the time there.
And I'd show up and have to beg just to get a breakfast with them. So. Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I just flew all the way to Denver.
Right, yeah, you had no time for me. I'm like, okay, breakfast, please.
So now, in college, did you date? Did you find a girlfriend in college?
Or? Yeah. So my freshman year, I stayed single, of course. Have to.
You gotta at least have a little buffer.
Yeah, I had a girlfriend for like 2.5 years in college, and then we broke up right before I signed, actually.
Oh my God. That's a tough one. Reminds me of a Seinfeld episode.
Right?
I have a new girlfriend now. We've been dating for about 2 years, too. Yeah. Met her when I was playing in Milwaukee, my second year pro.
How'd you meet her, and where'd you guys go for the first date?
Yeah, so I met her through... So her best friend had DM'd one of my good friends on the team and wanted to meet up and hang out. And then the guy on my team came up to me and was like, hey, dude, like, you got to go with me to this bar to meet this girl. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll go. And then, of course, the girl that DM'd him was like, told my girlfriend Natalie and was like, hey, you have to come with me to meet this guy at this bar.
That's
like, I don't want to go alone. So then me and Natalie got dragged along to a date, and then we ended up just meeting each other and kind of hitting it off, and we'd see each other when we'd go out and stuff all the time, but it wasn't like a instant connection, but we'd just talk all the time. We'd just hang out. It was super casual, you know. And then she ended up coming over, you know, one day, and we just kind of hit it off from there.
So that was your first date with her just coming over?
Yeah.
So you ended up from a wingman being the main man?
Yeah.
So both of you guys, I guess, were playing the wingman role there.
Yeah, so her friend and, you know, my teammate, they're no longer together or anything, but we ended up lasting out of it, so it was great.
Interesting story. So when you go out, what do you eat on a date?
When I go out, I'm a big Italian food guy. So all types of Italian food, chicken parmesan, all different types of pastas. A lot of chicken, obviously. Those are my biggest food groups. And then cheat days, cheeseburgers, pizza. Those are my favorites. But I try to not eat a whole bunch of those. But, you know, if I am going to cheat a day, then I have to.
And what's your favorite drink? What do you drink?
Drink? I'm a big root beer guy. Love root beer or, you know, Dr. Pepper. Those are my two favorite sodas for sure.
Alcohol?
Alcohol. I'm just a strict vodka soda with a lime.
Vodka soda
yeah,
with a lime.
Keep it clean.
Keep it clean.
Yeah, 100%.
Keep it clean and simple. So I know your dad is quite a food connoisseur himself. I see.
My girlfriend is.
Well, he was even before the girlfriend, so I do remember going back a few years. Yeah, he's definitely right. Quite a food connoisseur. So what about you? What's your favorite food?
Well, it's funny because Devin and I have like almost identical kind of likes, you know, in terms of food.
I noticed that
taste.
from the samosa.
We cannot handle anything spicy, which cuts me out of the Indian food and the Thai food and so forth. I love pastas. I used to love steaks, and the boys grew up eating steaks and the barbecues and all that kind of stuff. Not so much anymore, but pastas and I love sushi. Yeah, all kinds of different stuff.
So speaking of food now, once the season is over, does the diet change or it changes for a week or two and then you're back on your sort of regimen?
Yeah, I mean, my diet kind of stays the same. I probably won't eat as much, you know, especially like the first couple weeks after the season because you're kind of just laying around, relaxing, letting the body heal. So you're not as hungry. But my diet stays pretty much the same. It's hard to go back. Like when you eat clean all year long, it's hard to go back to eating like kind of like bad again because you feel bad when you do it, you know? And so try to keep things the same and stay healthy just so I feel good.
So we have a special guest here who want to ask you a question.
Yes. So hello. We are very happy to have you here, Devin. Thank you for coming to Radio Zindagi stations. And you're one of our local Bay Area stars. So that's really wonderful to meet you. So my question is, how did you decide that you want to be a goalie? Like, what was the inspiration behind that?
So when I first started playing hockey, we didn't have any goalies. And I just, maybe there weren't enough kids or what. But yeah, it was just, you know, from five to like, for the first 2 years, from five to like seven, we had no goalies. And so at the beginning, like, you would get to go play goalie in your player gear. They would choose one player to play goalie in their player gear. And I always really wanted to be the guy that was chosen. And so I can even remember the very first goal I let in ever in my full player gear. And then I just loved it so much. And then I think when I turned eight, my dad ended up getting me my own set of gear for my birthday. And yeah, I just never looked back. And now I really like it because I just love the pressure aspect. So like, I was telling him in the room just a little bit ago that you can be the hero every single night, you know, you can always be the guy that can make a difference, but you can also be the guy that, you know, everybody hates it if you don't do so well. And that's what I really like. I really like to be able to be a difference maker every night. And I like that pressure. I love those high pressure environments.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much.
That was awesome question, by the way. I want to compliment you because that's a great question.
Thank you.
Because, you know, typically you're more intimidated playing a goalie and all the kids, they all just want to skate around.
Right.
Goalie got to stay put over there.
I know. And it's so interesting to watch the game. I don't know if you were there when we went to watch the game.
Yeah.
He took us over there, but it was so interesting. There are hundreds of, not hundreds, but, you know, a set of number of players, but there's only one of you.
Yeah, definitely. So you stand out.
And now that she mentioned it, so we had organized a bunch of people to come on the Heritage Night game. That was against the Blackhawks. So that was his first game that he played at home in NHL. So that was a very historic game for him as well.
Yeah.
And it was for you too, very memorable.
Yeah, we won. Yeah, so congratulations and thank you so much for giving the opportunity to ask the question.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Hey, Devin, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Yeah, so I host a show which is a very frivolous show. So my question is also going to be very frivolous, okay? You have all your teeth intact. How does that happen in hockey? I don't know that many hockey players who got all their teeth intact.
Yeah.
Is it because you haven't played enough or is it because they are replacement teeth? What's up with that?
So goalies have their face fully covered. Players only wear the half mask and so they always get smacked in the mouth. The goalies are really protected. So you take a puck to the face all the time, but you're safe.
So I gotta say, I consider this show a big success because you guys are asking some great questions. I remember when the first day we had the show, you guys come along with? That is a great question. But yeah, that's a great answer too.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I said every hockey player has got these huge gaping holes in their mouth, and how come you got all your 32 intact?
That's what I was wondering. Yeah,
yeah. So it's funny, my daughters always talk about that. They said the goalies are always the most handsome because they have all their teeth.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're protected pretty well.
Their face is protected.
If your mom come to every one of your games.
Yeah, my mom, growing up, would always try to make it to the games. And then, especially now in the NHL, she tried to make as many as she could. And yeah, she was always very emotional, just like my dad, you know. But yeah, it's pretty funny watching her and seeing the replays on camera and stuff.
Yeah, so I think some of the people, I mean, I know I do want to mention, his mom and dad were divorced quite a few years, right? How many years has it been, Scott?
Oh, wait.
Eight?
Yeah.
Oh, wait. So for quite a few years, but when he was younger, I mean, they were always there, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, I always had super supportive parents, so really thankful for that.
And his mom cried when he let go of that goal, and they were showing up in at the SAP Center. So she was definitely had a high stake there.
Yeah. You know, looking forward to a much better season next year, because I used to follow NHL about 7 or 8 years ago, and every season we used to top the Pacific division, and we made it to the
Stanley Cup
once, and almost every single time we used to make it to the conference finals, right?
Yeah.
Then the last couple of years, I don't know, I stopped watching it. People don't watch when you lose, right?
I have a great news for you, because I wanted to do a little quick update of the Sharks or what happened since our last show. Well, the Sharks have won the draft lotto, so
they have the number one
draft pick, so that's pretty exciting.
So who's the number one prospect in the country today?
It's Celebrini. I don't know if you know him or not, but he's from Canada. I believe he's in North Vancouver, right? Do you know anything about him?
I think Vancouver.
Yeah. So I thought he was... Oh, I have an interesting story about him, too. His dad was coach of my cousin who plays soccer. He played soccer for college. And for whatever reason, they were in that neighborhood, lived in the same neighborhood in Vancouver. So he ended up being his coach. So he actually knew Celebrini as a kid.
Oh, nice. Celebrini played for the Junior Sharks too, actually.
Oh, really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
That is pretty crazy.
I don't know how many years, but he definitely did. Yeah. So.
And the Sharks, I think, now are rated number 2, I believe, in the prospects overall.
Nice.
So it's looking good, I think, next few years, it's going to change quite a bit. So I'm very excited.
I have a question for you.
Okay.
So you look young, like just out of college. So how do you balance your sports career and your studies? Like,
So I played hockey in college for 3 years, and I was just talking about it. It's actually tough. You got to have really good time management skills. You don't really have your weekends to like have fun or whatever, because you're playing games on the weekends or you're traveling. So you got to get all your schoolwork done ahead of time. As soon as you get it, you got to be really dialed in. I was telling him, like, my busiest days, like, it'd be 8 to 12 in class, 12 to 4 practice and working out and eating lunch, and then 4 to 8 in class again. So it's like, on your busiest days, like, you only have like a couple hours to study, and you got to get to bed at the right time, because otherwise you're not going to be as good on the ice, and you're not going to have as good as high of energy, you know. So a lot of it's just really good time management and planning ahead.
But these days you just take snaps every day.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But now that I'm not in school, I just get to relax.
And I think once you get close to NHL, you can forget studying. Now that is your career.
Yeah.
It's not going to get any better than that career. You know?
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm on a swim team, so I can relate to that.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you understand. A lot of it's just time management, you know, getting it done ahead of time, and it'll make your life a lot easier.
And that was a great question.
Thank you.
So that was a question from a son, and now from a concerned mom. First of all, it's a pleasure meeting you. So I would like to know that in our community, we are like academically pretty much driven, and every kid is playing some sports or other, maybe soccer or basketball. So what is that level? And I think the question should be directed to your dad. So what is that level where we could be certain that we need to push them in the sports direction and not pressurize them with the academics? So when did you find it out, or how did you find it out? That could be a great help for all the parents listening to us right now.
It's a great question, and I get it asked a fair amount. What did you do?
Yes.
You know, and And honestly, I don't have a solid answer, because all I can do is provide an opportunity. All I can do is put him in a situation, in an environment where he can run with something. And every year I'd ask him, what sport do you want to play? And he'd laugh at me, Dad, I just want to play hockey. And I go, okay. But I was never that parent that ever pounded on the glass and, you know, stop that puck and do this and do that. I'd sit up high up in the stands and I'd just watch him. And at the end of the game, I'd say, how do you think you did? And it was never me judging him or telling him, you know, he needs to do this or that. And I think by the time he was 6 years old, he was over my head for being his coach.
You know? Wow.
I coached him for a couple of years, I think, you know, and when he was really small. And that was it. It was all him, all on his own. But I just wanted to get him in the right spot to be able to go somewhere with it. But never foresaw NHL. In the back of my head, I was hoping that he'd have an opportunity to open a door at a good college. And that happened.
Right.
And so
that's what a lot of Indian kids are going.
That's assuring.
So that was my job, and I was done.
You did a great job, indeed. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I think a lot of that drive kind of comes from the kid, right? You can see when kid is excited about a sport, you can see that they can barely wait for the game versus parents pushing the kids, you know?
Right.
So a lot of it,
it's a lot of times it's just about being an example.
Yeah.
I mean, he never saw me being very lazy, I suppose.
Yeah. I'll second that.
He wasn't yelling at you when you let go.
No, so he never got mad at me for my performances. He never pushed me. He never really did much. But what he did do was give me the opportunity to work really hard and gave me every resource to succeed. And I think that was the biggest factor in my success, because I loved hockey. He didn't need to push me to be a hockey player. Like, I wanted to play every day. I wanted to practice as much as I could, you know, but he just gave me the resources in order to have the most success. And he made sure my grades were good. Obviously, that my academics weren't struggling, you know, but yeah, it was great.
I think, like she was saying, one thing definitely among Indian community, there's a lot of pressure on the kids. Especially for the studies and so on. And I think my take there is that let kids follow whatever they love to do.
For sure.
And as long as they follow their passion, they'll find a way to earn a living.
Yeah.
And if it happens to be academic, great. And if it's not, it's not the end of the world either. At the end of the day, we have a short life.
Yeah.
And if you are having to do something day in, day out that you don't enjoy, there's no point in that either. You
know? Yeah. Yeah, I agree. But yeah, he definitely made sure I had a backup plan with having solid grades, you know, but he was always super supportive with the hockey and pushed me in the right direction. But obviously, if the hockey fell through, I still was keeping up with my studies, so it was good.
So was he really picky on the grades, or was he saying, oh, well, you got to go to college and you got to get a degree?
No, he wasn't picky with that at all. It was more so just in case, in case this hockey thing doesn't work out, you know, it might be good.
Plan B.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, when I, especially once I turned, you know, 16, 17. And,
he's off the payroll. So.
Yeah, exactly. And the choice became, you know, do I go play juniors or do I go play in college, you know? And it was, well, am I even going to make juniors, you know? And so, like, those last couple of years, he really started to push me. He goes, hey, look, like, you really got to dial it in on hockey here. You really got to, like, make these last 2 years really worth it. You know, otherwise you got to start to focus on school more and you got to start applying to colleges. And in my head, I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to do that. Yeah, exactly. And at one point, I think I had my first year juniors was not good. I think I finished, like, last place, you know. And I came in for the summertime and I just wanted to relax, you know, before training and stuff. And he pulled me into the room and he's like, look, you're either going to get a job or you're going to go train for hockey. And I was like, I don't want to get a job. You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I'll go train.
That's a great, great incentive. Which reminds me, by the way, of a quote I use many times on this show, something about sports, that sports teach you how to lose with dignity and how to win with grace. And, you know, there's always another game. There's always an opportunity to get better. You learn from it and move on.
For sure.
And who can say better about that than their goalie, who has to shake it off very quickly, you know?
Yeah.
Move on to the next.
Yep. That's a tough part about being a goalie, but that's also the best part, you know?
Actually, hi, Devin. Thank you so much for coming to the studios. And for our little listeners who are tuned in, you're quite an inspiration.
Oh, thanks.
And so my question was that, you know, as a goalie, of course, when you're playing a sport, any sport, and you're playing on a professional level, there are a lot of skills that you have to bring to the platform. But what is that one skill as a goalie that you hold closest to your heart and you remind yourself that that's that one skill that's going to take you through a game?
Oh, man, that's going to take me through a game? I think it's got to be the mental side of things, you know, because that's something that's pretty hard to teach. A lot of it is just staying in the moment and being in the present moment, staying calm and relaxed. And the mental side is different for every goalie, too. And so that's what's tough, is that what works for another goalie or, you know, Blackwood, like my goalie partner, or what works for me could be totally different things. And so it's figuring out what works for you and what's going to keep you in the moment, what's going to make you play your best every single night and be consistent. Because a lot of goalies struggle with consistency because there's so much stuff that you can't control. You know,
true.
It's like how your team's playing in front of you, the other team you're playing against. You know, if the puck bounces a weird direction, you know, you can't control that stuff. And so I think you'll find a lot of goalies end up getting like really like spiritual and like very they do a lot of meditation, they do a lot of breath work and a lot of just being in the present moment. And so, yeah, the mental side of things, I would say, is my biggest.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being a part of this little effort that we have here on Radio Zindagi. We want to use this platform to bring our parent communities and our children closer to sports and definitely think about sports more seriously. I know we do with academics, but we want to get them closer to sport and definitely ice hockey.
Cool.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being part
of
that.
Yeah.
And thank you, Mahal.
My pleasure. I do have a few more questions. We can go over, right? How about we're good? We could go over. So a few more things. I want to make sure we get to it. One is, so when you're in college and you sort of sign your first contract, your first deal, how did that come about and what is that process even like? Who approached who and how did that happen?
So that was a crazy whirlwind too. A lot of nerves, a lot of energy during that time. But so yeah, it was during COVID and it was after my sophomore year. So I had a really good sophomore year. And after that sophomore year, we had a lot of interest from a lot of different NHL teams. I got invited to a bunch of development camps. And the plan for me was to sign after my junior year. That's what I wanted to do. But I ended up having a really bad injury the start of my junior year. And then COVID happened at the end of my junior year. So I only ended up playing like 9 games, didn't have the best year. And so it was like, okay, well, like, am I going to sign? What's going to happen? And everything was shut down, you know? So it was kind of like, okay, I think I've got to go back for my senior year. So I went back for my senior year, and my advisor at the time, my agent advisor, reached out and goes, hey, Nashville wants to do an interview with you. They want to sit down and talk to you. And I had heard that a bunch of times before, you know, like, this team wants to talk to you or blah, blah, and nothing had come of it. So I was like, okay, like, sure, didn't think anything of it. And I ended up sitting down with them, doing a Zoom interview with them, and it went really well. And they're like, yeah, we're not sure about this year or next year, but we just want to sit down and get to know you. And I'm like, okay, great. And at this point, I was like a month into my senior year of college. Like, I was like, I had all my new gear. I was like planning on being there for my senior year. I had signed the lease for my house and everything. And yeah, like 2 weeks later, heard nothing. And then, but yeah, 2 weeks later, my agent comes up and goes, hey, they just offered an entry-level deal. And I was like, no way. I was like, that's kind of like, freaking out.
That gotta be insane.
Yeah, it was the craziest feeling. And my agent goes, we're gonna tell him no.
Why?
Because the signing bonus wasn't where he wanted it to be. And he thought I could get more money. They weren't offering like a max signing bonus, and he thought I was worth a max. And so he's like, we're gonna tell him no. And I'm like, on the phone, I was talking to my dad. And I'm like, dude, I don't care about the money. I was like, I just want to sign.
Yeah,
it was like a dream come true. Yeah, and so my agent and them went back and forth for like 2 weeks. And this entire time, I had to stay silent. I couldn't tell anybody because Denver, it would have been a big deal, you know, if I was gonna leave. But, like, we didn't know what was gonna happen, if it was actually gonna work out or not. So I like couldn't sleep for like 2 weeks. I had all these nerves going all the time. And I just like wanted to sign, and they ended up coming back with a deal that we were comfortable with, and then I ended up signing it. And yeah, it was like definitely one of the best days of my life. It was a great feeling.
How did you celebrate after that signing?
Yeah, well, we couldn't do anything because of COVID, so it was
just me
and my housemates, and we just like, they actually filmed me signing the contract, you know, called my parents
crazy.
And stuff, and just hung out with them. And then it was like, you got to pack. because then it was like, we got to get out of here. So then signed the contract and then spent the whole day packing. And then I think the next day my mom had flew out and we drove back from Denver, Colorado back home. And then, yeah, a few days after that, I was in Nashville and I had started training in Nashville. So just a crazy whirlwind, kind of like when I got traded here. But yeah, definitely a super exciting time.
And when do you get a manager? Like at what point in your career do you think, oh, I'm going to need a manager?
Yeah, so with hockey, and especially if you go the college route, you're not allowed to have an agent. You're not allowed to pay an agent. They can't give you any benefits, really. But what you can have is a family advisor. So it's basically a pre-agent, which is basically your agent, you know, but you can't
but
actually
not
pay
acting
them.
Agent.
Exactly. So that way you still remain eligible for NCAA play. And so I actually had him. He came and reached out to me when I had first started playing junior. So I would have been 18 or something like that when I was playing in Illinois. And he reached out to me and I talked it over with my dad, and we're like, yeah, this sounds great. And so I had signed on with him, and then, had him through my first few years of pro. But those guys, especially, they reach out to players that they think have potential and stuff, but they don't make a dime, you know, unless you sign an NHL contract. Yeah. So it's a long way. And
but that's a good payback for them.
Yeah, for sure, exactly. But, yeah, I was with them for 6, 7, 8 years, something like that. And for 6 of those years, you know, he wasn't making any money. So definitely super fortunate and thankful for his effort.
Well, thank you very much. Like I said, I could talk to you for hours. There's so much to learn from your journey and what you accomplished. And I know your contract is coming up, so we don't know what's going to happen after that. And, there's a lot of tougher road ahead, even when you are in the NHL, believe it or not, right? So your another journey, like you said, has just started. So again, I appreciate your time. You know, thank you for coming to our show. Scott, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm sure our listeners are going to love this interview. Very casual. I love the way you explain things. So Devin, once again, thank you very much. Well, with that, guys, we're going to check out. I know we ran over time today. There's another show waiting to be started. But once again, we'll have the show for you when the next season of The Sharks starts in first week of October. But until then, thank you very much for listening. Aap sabka namaskar aur sunte rahiye Radio Zindagi. And this is your host, Charanbir Mahal from INDTV USA. And the show was brought to you by San Jose Sharks, INDTV USA, and Radio Zindagi. With that, I'm gonna check out. Bye.
Thanks for watching INDTV USA. Share your comments below, subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow us on Twitter and Facebook.